Hello and welcome to episode 18 of Zion's Finest.
We are bringing you another special battle report. This time I am joined by Eric of Twin Trooper fame.
Hey guys.
We are so glad to have him. Eric is awesome. He's got an awesome podcast.
Oh my God.
Way better than Zion's Finest.
You're like, so that's too nice. Honestly, we'll talk about, I guess, like Twin Troopers and podcasting in a little bit here, but honestly, it's great to just see. I was so happy when you guys started creating content, because really when I started Twin Troopers, it was literally just out of, I wanted to consume more, but there's just nothing at the time. And now there's so much compared to then. And you guys are doing a great job.
Well, you were the ones who inspired us, Eric. So you are the grandfather of us all.
Oh God.
So before we get into Eric's report, I just want some quick housekeeping items. First off, we want to thank everyone for all the awesome iTunes reviews we're getting. We would love it if you'd go on to iTunes, leave us a 5-star review, give us any feedback you want. We will change anything you want, subject to reasonable constraint, of course. We'd also would love it if you join us on the Slack channel, send us an email to zionsfinestia@gmail.com. We would love to have you. At this point, we're just going to turn it over to Eric. We're going to do his quick little introduction, the standard intro, and then we are going to get into his regional report. But Eric, take it away.
Oh my God, you are too nice. All right. Well, so yeah, let's start with how long I've been playing Imperial Assault, which it's kind of at. It's interesting that you bring this up, because literally the first competitive event I was in was the Minnesota Regional last year. And at that point, So it's been about basically 1 year at this point. So I've only been playing for a year, but to be fair, right, like I guess the amount of time that you can play per week makes a big difference. So I get about one day a week in. So, and you know, maybe a game or two. My wife and I play sometimes. So, you know, maybe 1 or 2 days a week is probably, and frankly, I think that's probably a lot for most people, at least in our area, because on average, I'm guessing most people are once every couple weeks. We had some people this, you know, yesterday at the regional that I haven't seen them in a while. So I'm guessing they haven't played in a while. So, you know, that depending how regularly you practice, you know, 1 year could be a little or a lot, but it's a good amount of time. I would say, you know, if you want to know more about my IA history, I started off as a big time Imperial player when I started. The Jet Troopers really had my attention, kind of coming out of Jabba's Realm. That's when I started playing. So I really enjoyed the Jet Troopers. I really enjoyed Captain Taro. So played Imperials about through the spring, basically Worlds time frame. And at that point, I wanted to try some of the Rebel, basically the Rebel heroes. And especially I was kind of exploring. It was just kind of my historic, I guess, like list faction thing. But, you know, I picked up some Rebels, and mostly because a lot of the Rebel heroes that are a little bit overcosted have really excellent surge abilities. So like Jin and Lando have kind of neat surge abilities. Absolutely. And so for a while I was playing, you know, like this, you know, just kind of like using Jedi Luke and some of these other stranger, you know, Rebel lists. And I kept doing that through the release of Heart of the Empire in the summer, which obviously brought a new boon with Han and, you know, lots of, you know, Chewie and things like that. So there's a lot of fun stuff to do. And so just recently this fall, I moved back to Imperial, and this is when I kind of want to start checking out. I was really excited about the Riot Troopers, and obviously we're going to talk about my regional game, but I ran two sets of Riots. So, that's kind of been my history with that. And then obviously I created Twin Troopers literally a year ago. The first post is about my regional report, or is about my prep for regionals and ultimately me going to regionals. And so I hope people have enjoyed Twin Troopers. I'm really glad it kind of inspired you. I don't think you need to be like so deferential that I helped you start out or that I've done any of that stuff. You know, I just want to emphasize, it's really great that you guys are creating content, because I don't think, at least for me, before I started doing Twin Troopers, I didn't have nearly kind of the appreciation of what it takes for, I guess, like if you're a fan of something and you're casual and it's not your job, right? Putting in that effort to create content, it takes time, and it's really rewarding when people engage with it. And, you know, kind of the hard part is, I'm sure you guys are doing well for yourselves, but you know, building up that audience, you know, those first few that weeks or months when like people really aren't engaging that much, you're kind of an untested product yet. You're like, you know, and you just keep slogging at it, and really, you know, you build up name recognition, and then eventually you're invited onto someone else's podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think that's the thing is with us. How it was actually kind of easy for us to start a podcast, because we listened to, I used to listen to Vader's Finest and Mandalorian Tactics, and then they kind of went away. There was always Board Wars, but then you guys started producing content.
Yep.
And I think realistically, the Twin Troopers has been the only podcast that has like consistently produced skirmish-focused Imperial Assault podcasts. And so, you know, when we decided to start it, I thought like, well, what Twin Troopers is doing is, you know, you guys are doing these amazing like unit breakdowns where you're going to take a unit that you haven't played probably, or maybe that's not like super competitive, or maybe it is, but like you're going to talk about it in a different way. So I'm like, why don't we just take another aspect of skirmish and just focus on that? And we just built on our community, so even the, like our local community, and that it's got like, you know, Imperial Assault, because it's everyone plays it all over the world, we've got like an easy way to get people engaged. But realistically, like the hard work was done way before we got into it. So
yeah, that's true for me too. Yeah. It's really interesting how you can kind of, how like these communities grow and things like that. Like, I don't know about you guys, but you know, some of the most humbling moments, at least in us, you know, when Tim and I were doing the podcast, was like, we'd get messages from people in Germany and Brazil and things like people who love, they like really like Imperial Assault. They really like the podcast. I'm like, oh my God, like I'm in, you know, part of me feels like I'm in over my head here. Like I'm just some guy not just middle America, the middle of the North American continent, as middle as possible. And I'm just talking about Imperial Assault because I really like it. That's what's going on here.
There you go. Well, it's awesome. We love it. We love every bit of it. So
you want to talk about some regionals? That's why I'm here.
I'd love to talk about some regionals. Tell us about it.
Okay. Well, so, you know, I think it would probably just make sense to start with the list before we get into too much, because I'll admit, like, for a long time, I've kind of been a contrarian player in some ways. And it's not really because I find, like, I don't know if I like just like to be a stick in like people's, oh, that's a good way to say it. It's like a stick in the mud or something like that. But I just like exploring things that other people aren't thinking about. And I'm not usually looking for like a prescribed solution to a problem. So, right. Like if the last world's meta was Scum Hunters, I wasn't really looking to just make another Scum Hunters list and improve on that. Part of it is having fun, like creativity. And then the other part is also like, maybe there's some, like if there's some unobserved benefit in a list and people aren't going to be ready for it, like, can I leverage those two things? And, you know, that's kind of also how, like when we do the Twin Troopers unit reviews, we try and approach a figure like, is there something unobserved that people aren't seeing here? That is it a mistake that they're not seeing it? Like, is there something we're missing here? And so that's kind of like how I try to build my list that way. So the list I brought was, and this is one that's been in development for a while. So I'll start with just kind of like the main framework. The main framework originally was two sets of elite jet troopers, two sets of elite riot troopers, and basically two officers. That was like where this whole list began. So you can kind of see I'm like looking into riots, I'm looking into jets. And as I was testing this list out, and the other specifics aren't all that important, but as I was testing this list out, I kind of discovered that riot troopers can stay on the board for kind of an obnoxiously long time. Like much longer than you expect. And then even when they die, the elites are worth 3 and the regulars are worth 2 points per figure. And so if an opponent removes them, first of all, they can eat one or two attacks. I mean, sometimes two attacks, which feels really good on my end, right? If they live that long. Yeah, absolutely. And even then they're just not getting much value from it. So this is kind of the area that I was exploring. Oh, and I guess in Zillow too. But so this was the area I started exploring in. Just over the past few weeks, I changed it because we started looking into the regular riot troopers. So the elites have 7 health, the regulars have 5 health each, but the difference is 2 points for the squad, and then the regular riots only give 2 points per figure when they die. And so we were kind of theorizing in our local group here that maybe there's value in dropping, maybe you shouldn't run elite riots at all, because maybe you get enough of the staying power of the regulars, because a lot of times, even the elite riots, they just aren't fighting at that often. They aren't performing attacks that often. Nope. They're sitting on objective.
They put pressure on the board.
Yep, exactly. They like push your control area, what I would guess call your areas of control. They push it out. They push closer to your opponent. They get in the way, block lines of sight, those type of things. So we started exploring this idea. Will the regular riots just suffice for that? And so the list that I ultimately settled on was 2 jet troopers, one elite riot, a regular riot, 2 regular officers, Zillow technique, and then that was at 31 points, and then I plopped in an ATDP in that last spot. So yeah, the ATDP was kind of a late add. That used to be Captain Taro is what I was running, but I kind of found that I was having issues with A, he had a little bit of survivability problem, and then B, just kind of like an issue of with so many figures, it was actually kind of difficult to get the value of his movement because it'd be kind of difficult to land him in the adequate places that he needed to go. And especially on like Nal Hutta, on Nal Hutta and on the Mos Eisley back alleys, like things would be so congested in the lanes that I needed to travel. And it's just like, he can't, flamethrower is great. There's all kinds of great things about Captain Taro, but I just like couldn't use him very well. So I figured I need something that is gonna, you know, kind of have some range on it, be kind of an area control threat, which again, absolutely, the ATDP was. And that's kind of, so that's kind of where I ended up landing. And then of course it's a vehicle, which had its own synergies with the jet troopers. And that is how we got to this list.
Why? And so did you ever think about having Palp and Rule by Fear instead?
Yes, I did consider the Palpatine route. I think it was just because I brought in the ATDP so late. Like maybe I would have settled on Palp at some point, but because I brought in the ATDP just like a couple weeks ago, I got in some reps with it. And pretty at that point, yeah, I was like, I'm going to stick with this now. And again, you know, it was the kind of the vehicle thing. And but, you know, That's where we ended up. I hit a point normally where it's like, all right, if I haven't practiced a certain like style of play, a certain list, it's like, probably not. I don't want to go there.
Though. Yeah, I totally get that.
All right. And then I just thought I'd mention a few command. I want to mention a few command cards. So obviously if you're someone who wants to try this list out, I brought some of the staples like, so Overrun, Call the Vanguard, Grenadier were kind of in my high end slots. Fuel Upgrade, I think is a must in this one. But one of the other, a couple that I found particularly interesting that I think people might, you don't think of, but they ended up being pretty good in this game, in these games. A card called Take Position, which probably no one has ever heard of or looked at that closely, but.
From the Utah Regional, Todd Sieber, he ran the ATDP and he used Take Position to great effect.
Oh yeah. So, okay.
So that's a brutal card, but tell us about it.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. So I was just going to mention like with the ATDP, you know, it's kind of interesting because ATDP, it's really easy to get caught up in the idea of that you should always be looking for the assault double attack. But occasionally, Take Position. So Take Position is a 0 point card, comes with the Harrison Dula and Chopper pack. 0 point, it's for guardian or vehicle only. What it gives is for one action, you can get during this round, you gain +1 block. Or for two actions, you can perform a move and during this round, you gain +2 blocks. So the ATDP already has an innate +1 block. So basically for the whole round, you can get +3 free blocks, and you're also rolling a black dice for the whole round. And so it sounds really dumb to pass on your attacks, but if you're, like my list is, if you're an objective-focused list, there are times when you can basically perform the move, take the 3 blocks, you plop them right on, you know, like, I don't know, like the stash in Jabba's Palace or one of the shields and shielded or on Nal Hutta. And, you know, you're just controlling the board and you're protecting your other figures. Your opponent doesn't really know what to do, like how, you know, it's not worth attacking it. So, yeah, that card's really excellent. I had a really good experience with that.
Also, you can play the card and then push that thing with your officers. And so you're going to have this amazingly defensive ATDP that is just getting pushed up. Right. And so now at the start of the next round, your opponent's going to be like, well, I couldn't attack it last round because it's so beefy, and now it's going to start shredding me. So
yeah, it's so great. Yeah, I would say that too with Fuel Upgrade, ATDP with Fuel Upgrade. That thing's a monster with any of those just passive abilities that go so the whole round. It's a disaster for your opponent to deal with it. Okay, that's the list though. I don't need to say too much else about, I guess, the actual list. Oh, and but I mean, so before we go into the matches, I guess it's probably valuable to just talk about what my strategy is. And this is kind of interesting that when planning for this episode, we kind of talked, you kind of have here that I should like talk about my strategy. And I think in the past I was kind of bad about, like even thinking about like, what is my win condition with my list? Like, how am I going to win with this? Because I think I've fallen into the trap, at least when we were in the hunter meta, it's hard to get out of this idea, but you're going to win by killing figures, like mostly that's the whole idea. Yeah. But just recently with some of the maps they've rotated in, right, like Shielded, you can, I keep saying Shielded, but on Nal Hutta, right, so you have, you know, the hold the objective points where they're 4 points each for holding them, or even in Jabba's Palace, the holding the stashes for 4 points each, right, you can get really significant objective point swings if your opponent doesn't contest them, you know, right?
Absolutely.
And as we go through these matches, I can kind of detail that a little bit more, but You know, so that's really changed the way that you can kind of run a list. And so looking at my list, like essentially what it does is just as we kind of discussed was right with the riots, essentially I basically push out and force every objective on the map. Jet troopers use them as block, as basically cover. And the ATDP kind of just slowly brings up the rear, essentially as another form of area control, and especially like punishing, you know, some of those stronger melee figures that want to come in and attack you. And it just basically acts as most of the time as a deterrent, frankly. So
do you have reinforcements in your command deck?
I was running them once I brought the riots down to regulars. Once I switched out a set to regulars, I took out reinforcements, but yeah, okay. I was still on the fence about it. Honestly, I think reinforcements is a really good card. So
yeah, especially with the double elite riots, I think it's kind of a must.
Oh yeah, I was
one, then you're right. Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Cool. All right. So tell us how it went.
All right.
Spoiler alert, he did really good.
Spoiler alert, I did really good. Oh, thanks. That's so nice of you. So nice of you to say. Hold on. All right. Yeah, so, well, the setup was we had 18 players. So we had 18 players, and that meant that we did four rounds of Swiss with a cut to a top eight was kind of our initial setup. So normally, like, when people play with me, I'm really cool. Like, I'm really chill, I feel. But at this tournament, I was so stressed the whole time. Like, it's kind of funny, like, when things are on the line, how much your attitude can change, you know, like, how much more, sure. Like, how much more intense it was. So I guess I'll start, like, round one. So just kind of going through. Now, I won't get too specific on these because, honestly, like, the strategy I have for... I'm going to just try and explain the strategy I did for most maps. Because the truth about this list is, and a reason why I like it, is given its health and how it's so much black dice focused, and it's not really that offensively focused, honestly, like, there aren't moments in these matches that are big swing moments that sometimes you think about, right? Like, sometimes, like, for me, like, a whole match could be defined, like, my opponent activates Luke Skywalker last, and he double attacks, and then he plays Son of Skywalker, and he double attacks, and he takes initiative me, and he double attacks again, and it's, like, that's the whole game, and I lost, and that's how I define the game. That's, like, how you have to define the game, like... But the list I'm playing basically doesn't have those moments because it doesn't do those moments itself in any way. And it's just not that susceptible to those moments because I don't have that much to lose with any given exactly. attack.
Yep.
So starting round one, first match was on Jabba's Palace, the new ownership mission. And this was the hold the stashes. And I was up against a Jedi Luke list with two sets of regular Rangers. So in my notes, I wasn't super diligent about everything, but I can give you basically the big figures, yeah. The big characters I had. So
that's 30 points right there. So
yeah, that's pretty much the show. But yeah, so for Jabba's Palace, like, so if you're playing a very objective focused list like mine, my plan was, I mean, honestly, pretty straightforward. So I had two objectives. A, I wanted to control the kind of that Jabba's Palace throne room area. So where the pit is. Because I want to control that area, and I want to control the pit itself, is basically like the goal I set for myself in this mission. And, you know, mainly obviously because there's two stashes there. Like, right, those stashes are the ones I want, and I can afford with this list to throw figures down into the pit quite easily, right? I don't have a lot to lose if I throw a ride or two down there. I only need to throw one down there in this particular mission, so that's pretty good. So essentially, that's pretty much what I did. So in round one, I ran figures to the stash on kind of in Jabba's room and down in the pit, and we had a swing. Basically, I went eight points to zero on objectives in round one, and there was no casualties in round one, basically. And a lot of that, too, you know, my opponent was very hesitant to open this door with the ATDP because it's kind of fascinating when if you're the ATDP player, and this is kind of different from Tarot, but as the ATDP player, right? I opened my door almost immediately on this map, you know, sent them into the pit, took the spots. And then, you know, as long as you don't activate the ATDP there, they just have some hesitance about like, do I start this? And it also helped that he only had regular Rangers. I think if he had elite Rangers, I maybe would have had to be a little bit more cautious just given their abilities versus the regulars. But in this case, you know, he kind of gave me full run of the board right there. He did move to contest the center with Jedi Luke. And I basically move. See, the kind of the fascinating thing about this is once he moves his army over, then I pretty much can go move all my jets and, you know, remaining rides kind of in that area too. And see, so the thing about this list as well, and this kind of just like tells the rest of the story of this map, is that once an opponent is given up those objective points, I'm basically playing from. So once it's an 8-0 swing on the objective points in the first round, I basically all I have to do for the rest of that entire game is. I just have to go even,
hold
more
on.
Or less.
Yeah,
I don't.
Exactly.
I don't.
Hold on.
I can basically be a little less efficient than them, and I'm still pretty far ahead at that point. And that's essentially what happened here. And the thing that I've, again, a fun thing to see opponents do sometimes is like when that swing happens, like just things get more dire for them. So I feel they actually do kind of make more mistakes, like trying to, they realize like, oh, well, I have to get rid of, I have to like be really aggressive because that's how I'm going to win. And then like, so in this game, round two, I went 12-0 on the stashes because they feel just more, there's more intensity and they can't do, you know, they have to do, they feel they have to do something. So yeah, that one was a win. And in, you know, round one and two, I had a 20-point objective swing. So, you know, it's pretty hard. There's really no way to come back from that. So round two is Nalhada. This one was, let's see, Raining Freight, I believe is the name of that mission. I'd have to be sure. It's mission B. It's the one where you pick up boxes, you know, you get, Nalhada. It starts with four boxes on the map. You and your opponent each have four boxes or two boxes a piece. And, you can spend two movement points to pick up a box. So in round one, this again, the plan was the same. I was against, a Jedi Luke and Rangers list. So this Elite Rangers this time. So this is a little bit scarier. And I played against a local guy who he and I play pretty often. Like he's one of the regulars around here. But so I knew that he was pretty adept at playing Luke Rangers because he likes him and plays him a lot. And he did a pretty good job. So the way this mission started was pretty much the way you'd anticipate. Like my plan for this is to take advantage of my sheer numbers and kind of low value of my figures. So regular riots and elite riots kind of shifting their way to the right and left sides of the map to grab the boxes on the side. And then essentially the rest of the army, just, I pushed forward towards that center kind of like waterlogged area. You can kind of think of it, you know, it's the hallway that basically connects the two deployment zones. So walk the ATDP forward, walk the jets and everything else up there. But the nice part was since he had Luke and Rangers, right. Luke just naturally kind of has to come pretty close to you to be a threat. And so, which was actually kind of helpful with these boxes, right? Because as he's closer, I'm just dropping the boxes.
Dropping boxes right beyond him.
Yep. Yeah, right beyond him. He doesn't really, and the Rangers are, because they're still so far back, it's not like they can even really participate in that game in any meaningful way. So I'm dropping those in front. He activates a strong unit first. I just activate riot troopers, regular riot troopers first, walk up, grab two boxes. It's like if it dies, it doesn't matter. So this is another game, right? Where, so round one, round one, I got four objective points. My opponent killed an elite riot. Round two, I got eight objective points and he killed an elite jet and my ATDP in that round. Then round three, he had moved. Oh, he has an Ahsoka too. I kind of forgot about it. He had moved Ahsoka too close and I killed Ahsoka for eight. I got four more objective points for a total of 20 objective points to zero on this map against my opponent. Again, another situation where it's like, I don't actually need to be that efficient in these, in the fighting part of the map. It just doesn't, it's not actually all that important. So
that just, you just have to get a somewhat equivalent trade and even like a little low trade and you're totally fine.
Yeah. And that's pretty much it. Cause let's see. Yeah. He killed about like 15 points in my stuff and I only killed eight or so, but it's just not, it's too much. Yeah, and again,
definitely allows you to do that.
Yeah. That's a pretty fascinating one. So moving on to round three was Mos Eisley Cantina. And this one, I don't actually have the mission name for it. This is the one where you hold or where you bring the boxes back. I can't remember what that one's called. Maybe you do, but it's, there's boxes. There's like eight boxes on the map. You're going to look it up cause you're a good podcast host, but there's like eight boxes on the map. You can spend an action to pick them up and bring them back to your stash, which is in your deployment zone pretty much for 4 points each. I think this is probably the worst mission. In some ways, it's the best, and in some ways, it's the worst. It's the worst mission for my list because I don't really... The problem is that, yeah, the riots can push out better than anyone else, but the issue is how do I push them out and get them back and then even still fight? So in this scenario, this mission was pretty close. I was against a Han, Ahsoka, Jin, Hera... God, who else was in this? Like...
That's like my dream list. That's it.
Yeah. Han, Ahsoka, Jin, Hera... God, what else was in this list? Like two smugglers. It was nine activations. And by the way, I play against this list three times in a row right now. This is the first time of three. The people who brought this list, though, they were both from Wisconsin. So they traveled like from central Wisconsin to our regional. So it was pretty cool. They're really nice guys. They're both running a very similar list. But this one was hard because honestly, he had, I think like two, it was either two or three smugglers, which they are actually quite adept at grabbing those boxes and bringing them back to the stash. Yeah. So in round one, he killed one of my riot troopers and he got an objective so he was ahead by six, this map too, but So, and essentially when I am on this map, my plan is to move my riot troopers towards the middle, because I understand those middle boxes. There's four boxes right in the center there to grab at 4 points each. And I know whoever gets those is going to like have an edge on this mission, because essentially the way it's set up is that each player gets a couple gimme boxes, I would say. Like, if you have an activation to waste to go get them, you'll get them. Your opponent's not going to be able to stop you. And then there's those middle ones that are really dangerous to try and get, but if you can grab them, you know, it's the 4 points is good. So yeah, I was able to grab those. I grabbed two of those boxes. He didn't grab any from the middle. I grabbed two other boxes. And this is kind of the weak part of their list, I think. Like, we were kind of theory talk. We were talking about theory, like strategy, during some of our downtime. And I was talking with these two guys who were running this exact same list and how we think that just Ahsoka, just because she would always have to, so this is kind of ends up being a story of these three games that I'm about to talk about, but Ahsoka would always have to come in to attack like an ATDP or a jet trooper. And then she's just hanging out there for basically a whole round and possibly 2 to 4 activations of jet troopers. And Ahsoka's a good figure, but she's not going to make it through that many activations.
No.
Figures.
Ahsoka, like, you've either got to bring her in at the very end, or you've got to have like lots of other things that are putting pressure on the board, or else, I mean, she's got 12 hit points and a white die. She's going to die.
Right.
So, you know, and she's not a smuggler. She doesn't have, like, she's got no way to defend herself.
Yeah. To get
consistent attacks.
So, right. To get out.
I mean, you got to have pressure on the board, or be picking off. Like, what I do with her is I dive bomb in at the end of the round, intending to pull her out. Or I send her in on like one of the sides where they can't like commit a ton of resources to. So.
Yeah, I really like her, but she's kind of in a hard place. She's a hard place, especially in Rebels, who don't have a lot of forward. They have a lot of units that want to push forward all that much, which is kind of tough. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but so that game was really close, because honestly, if he hadn't lost as Ahsoka, I don't know if I actually would have won that game. But so yeah, I pull out a win in round three as well. So I'm 3-0 at this point. But that was a hard game, mostly because of those objectives. Like, and that was kind of the hard part, because I had gotten so used to, and even in our local meta, I've just gotten so used to people running like very expensive, not very mobile figures. Where it's like, if I force them to split up and run the map and shoot at things that they don't want to shoot at, like, I have a pretty easy time, because I basically get to make all the decisions about how the game's going to go. Like, they always have to respond to me. I don't have to respond to them almost ever in some ways. But yeah, with the smugglers, I'm like, oh God, I have to get these boxes faster than he does, because he's going to get them. And, you know, maybe this is when I make a mistake, because, you know, I'm not used to playing that way. But I pulled that one out. So yeah, that was a good one. So next game, back on Nalhutta for Shielded, and I am against this guy's friend who's playing basically the exact same list. Han, Ahsoka, Jin, Hera again, the Rebel Care Package, and a bunch of smugglers. 9 activations, so many activations. And so Shielded, again, like, the strategy is the same on Shielded as most. I hope people are like listening to this and kind of can, I don't know if I'm doing a good enough job of kind of describing how you end up playing it, because I think it's fun for people to try and play this way, because it really is not, you do not need offense in this list, basically. I say that a little tongue-in-cheek, but it's not the point. But so this one, same list, Shield is probably the strongest map for this list, which again sounds stupid for a bunch of melee figures, but in a way, this is Nalhutta is the ultimate map of I can basically have control in every lane. And I started on the top. I started on the top of this map, if you can imagine that. That's the cliff side, the cliff. Because on this one especially, the jet troopers can just slip right down to that objective, and it's relatively safe. But yeah, this one kind of had a very similar... This one had a similar bent to it in a way. Round one, my opponent killed an elite riot. I got one objective. He actually contested all the objective points on this map, except for the cliff one that I sent the jet to. So that actually kind of surprised me and like made me a little worried at first. But the problem is, like, when you do that, because I think Ahsoka was one of the units contesting one of them. So that's kind of one of those situations where in round two, he felt a lot of pressure to get her offensive, right? Because it's 8 points. She can't really, and this is kind of where the value of the regular riots comes in, because she's sitting on a objective point contesting a regular riot at 2 points versus you know, her 8 points, and it's like, okay, how much value am I getting here? And this was another good map. So like in round two, when he finally felt the pressure kind of to pull off, I'd killed Jin early in that round. Jin, love that figure, but yeah, that's another one where the health is low enough where it's kind of She's just always in that one shot range and so unpleasant, but yeah, I really like her. But yeah. So in round two, this was another one of those rounds where I went 12-0 on objectives that round. So, and then at that point in round three, that was when I did one of the, what we were talking about earlier with the ATDP, where I gave it the take position for two blocks and I just shoved it right on that middle objective. All my jets were still behind, like in behind that objective point. So it's just like, all right, I'm pretty much safe. Cause at this point, cause you know, he's got Han and Han can't usually leave his spots, you know, leave wherever he's posted up. He's not going to leave there.
Nope.
Yeah. And after that, it was pretty much it. Ahsoka again died cause she went for it, but you know, same problem as the other list. Once Ahsoka goes in, it's like she can't get out and that's just that.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. And the problem is like the problem with Ahsoka is that with most Rebel lists these days, unless she's running with Alliance Rangers, it's really hard for Ahsoka to one-shot elite jets and elite riots because her attack is going to be Zillowed. The Pierce is going to be Zillowed.
Yeah, that is it.
You know, you're only going to get a Pierce 1. You're going to get a Pierce 1 plus 2. And that, it's, if you're, unless you're, even if you're focused, it's still hard to, like, punch through.
Yeah.
You get 7 health and then 2 block, right? And you're going to Pierce 1 of that. So it's just tough to do.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so 12-point objective swing, very hard to come back from that. So yeah, another one that basically, again, all these maps, all these missions have basically gone the way that I just dictated kind of these matches, right? Like I took control of the objectives. You put a little pressure on in one spot with your main offensive units. Normally your opponent feels forced to respond because, again, they can't as efficiently just sit on objectives as you can. And that's kind of forces them to move away. You don't move away. You just sit on the objective. It doesn't matter to you. And then, you know, at that point, it's just kind of gravy from there.
Absolutely.
So that was the end of Swiss. So I went 4-0 in Swiss, which was way better than I expected to go.
That's amazing. It's undefeated.
It's really scary to do it, honestly, because it's just
was there another 4-0?
We had one other 4-0. Yep. Okay. I was about to say he and I didn't play. So yeah, obviously we didn't.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, there's one other 4-0, and then so we did like a 30-minute break, and yeah, I kind of just wanted to talk briefly about that. During that break, we kind of had, I don't know if you ever have those like magical moments where you just have like a lot of players who just like kind of come together and have like some good strategy talk. You know, at that point, it was only top 8 players left, but we were all pretty happy to be candid about what we were doing, and like I was talking with the two guys that I played against just there, you know, and I was pretty straightforward about like, you know, here's my strategy, you know, here's the whole point of the list, like how it operates. Yep. And we were talking about the command cards that they had in their deck. It was, you know, it was like one of those really fun moments where it's just like, it was just natural. We don't know, you know, none of us are that close. We don't know each other that well, but
sure.
Just kind of shooting the breeze there.
Shooting the breeze.
Yeah. That's awesome. Okay. But then top 8 began. And part of me, like always at this point, right. You like got your, you basically have all the prizes that you're going to want at this point. I mean, I think there was like a damage tracker in top 4. It was like, I don't need a damage tracker.
Yeah, the point tracker. The point tracker.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. But so top 8, I was against the same list again. So I was against the list from the player from 2 rounds ago. So not the guy I just played, but the player from 2 rounds ago. Same list, this time on Jabba's Palace, and this was on, God, it's something spoils, but it's the one where you pick up the boxes, you lose 2 movement points. At the end of the round, every figure... spoils a crime, that's it. Every figure that's holding a box at the end of the round gains 2 points. This one, again, same idea. It was a lot closer than the other one, because I think this one's just a little bit harder to... Right, again, riots are good at grabbing objectives, but because they lose the movement points, they only move 2. Yeah. They're a little bit more susceptible to being picked off kind of before you can get those. And I guess the other part is that the point getting is a little bit conditional, right? I have to use an activation, grab a box, and my opponent has basically all the information they would need to prevent the box points. Yeah. Or sometimes right on the stash missions or things like maybe an objective is unoccupied the whole time. And then maybe, you know, if I activate a set of jets, my last activation, I could grab 2 objectives and you're like, oops, I didn't think I had to contest those. Like, ah, rats. Or in this one, it's, you know, in this one, it's pretty hard to do that. And at the same time as well, you can't end up waiting to grab these boxes normally in my experience with jet troopers. Cause if you need them to be offensive, you can't really afford to pick up the boxes. So But the idea in Jabba's Palace with this type of list is the same idea, right? Control that Jabba's throne room area, and then also use that to control the pit. Because especially with this list, with Han, Ahsoka, these types of things, it's very unlikely that he wants to go in the pit in any meaningful way with any of his figures. Most of them are too expensive.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my plan. So in this match, basically in round one, I opened my door immediately, threw my riots into the pit, and used one of my riots to grab. There's a kind of a, if you start on the top side of that map, there's a box pretty close right outside that door. So I grabbed that box immediately, as well as I couldn't get the two in the pit, but moved to grab them in round two. So I grabbed one box, and then I was able to actually pick off one of his smugglers in the beginning. And then this is kind of a trick you can kind of learn if you do some practicing, but I was also able to grab the box that's kind of in the Jabba's maze area on the top side, which normally would be too far away, but I had used my officers to move my ATDP, actually, to bump some figures. And if you have enough figures, you can actually, you know how normally you would have to move them to the closest space? Because I have so many figures, you can actually pull it off where you can move some figures two spaces because you've moved them so
there's no other legal spot for
them. There's no other legal spot. And you can actually, sometimes you can do that with lots of figures because where you move, because you know you can choose any order to move them, because the ATDP is occupying so many spots, you'll move them, they'll take the spaces that should have been taken by these other figures that had a close space, so then they'll bunny hop too as well. So you can actually get a lot of like kind of cheater movement out of the ATDP if you want to. It's not always, sometimes you got to think like, am I getting any value out of moving two extra spaces with some of these figures? But in this one, I kind of counted it out and I was like, okay, I could grab, because I didn't think he wouldn't be so aggressive to move up to that box. And I was like, that's going to be too, you know, put 2 points on the board for me right away. That's, you know, just going to accumulate over time. But so this one, I would say this is a good map for my list as well, because right, it's so easy for me to grab these objectives, and his list just doesn't really have that many figures who want to grab those other than the smugglers. But yeah, he lost smuggler early. He grabbed a box with a different smuggler. This was another one though, where I kind of like grabbed as many boxes as I could. And then he and I started duking it out kind of in the maze area. And this was another one of those points where I kind of used the ATDP with take position to... I basically had two really low health jet troopers. What I ended up doing was surrounding them with riot troopers and bumping my ATDP on the... like basically walling them in entirely. So there's no... basically, you couldn't... there's no way to get to them in any sense. You couldn't get to the injured ones. And that's kind of how I ended up... rounded out this game, basically. So I ended up scoring... a total of, let's see, 20. This was another 20 objective point list against, I think, like four objective points for my opponent. Yeah, so it's so much. It's ridiculous to play that way. Last year, I would not have thought that was even a feasible way to win these games. So it's kind of fun that the maps will do it. We'll let you do that if you want to. But yeah, he was a nice opponent. It was really fun to talk. It was really fun to talk with those guys and kind of like think about their list. But yeah, I'm sure it was obnoxious playing against my list. The other thing about this list that I will say that's my list in particular that stinks is that every one of my games went to time. I was always the last player playing.
But it's like, it's winning on objectives. So you're not clearing the table with them. So
yeah. Well, winning on objectives and winning on time. And that part of it will actually be very important in like a second here when we get to finals, but so let's go to top four. Top four was on Mos Eisley. This is the one where you hold, I can't remember what this got. See, Mos Eisley is too new. I don't remember these missions. It was mission A, but it's where you hold the boxes for points at the end of round. So this mission was against another, this was a local Minnesota guy, a relatively new player but he's been putting in his reps, and he was running a Han Rangers list. So Han and two sets of Elite Rangers. So basically, it's kind of my worst nightmare, honestly, because they basically are ATDP eating machines, essentially. Yeah. So yeah,
if your ATDP is anywhere, they're gonna kill it.
Yeah, so. And on that map particularly, it's just like, oh my god, all the lanes are all there. The lanes are all set. They're just ready. Yeah. So this one was very close. This game could have gone either way. So. This helped me a lot. So round one, I went, nothing died, but I went 8 objective points to 2. So that was a big swing for me. I took those middle spots and some of the side spots. Round two, he and I traded. not evenly, but close enough. I cleared two elite rangers of his, and he got the ATDP and a jet trooper. And then I went 6-2 on objectives. So again, this is the worst mat for my list, I would say, because I can't split a force base. I can't split them up. I can't make them have to make a lot of hard decisions. Basically every figure can get wherever they need to go to engage me if they want to. Yeah. But this game was kind of the execution of, if I get enough objective points, I don't need to be that efficient in the fighting. So then I hit round three, and this is the round, basically, like, looking back at my notes, I remember I thought that I basically had lost this game at this point, because in this round, my opponent had an attack that basically, I had a set of jet troopers, like, full health jet troopers, that I was going to activate and probably be able to kill one or two rangers of his, which at that point I was pretty certain would have won me the game. But he activated his rangers and did, I think his first attack did one damage when he attacked me, so I felt really good about that. I'm like, okay, I'm fine. And then his second attack, with the second ranger, he used Assassinate and did, I think, like seven damage pierce two, and killed my jet trooper in a single shot, basically. And that, I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna lose. So that round, I got 4 objective points for the only points I got the whole all of round three. And then he got an elite jet, an elite riot, a regular riot, and an officer. And I was like, okay. I was like pretty sure I had lost at that point. And so I was like, oh, this is gonna be tough. This is gonna be hard. And we kind of had this funny moment where he and I were like, he thought that we needed to go to round four for him to win. And I thought we needed to go to round four for me to win. So we knew we were getting close to time. It wasn't that close where like either of us could slow play it or anything, but it was like close enough where I was like, oh man, I got to go to the next round. And he's like, we got to go to the next round. But after we kind of got through it all, he realized that he would have won if we would have stopped at that round. But so we made it to round four, and I actually pulled Call the Vanguard. Okay. And I got a super lucky play here, which is probably why. I mean, Imperial Assault is a game where, you know, you get punished by dice. Sometimes you get rewarded, sometimes you get punished by dice.
You bet.
He killed a 6 health jet trooper earlier, so that's pretty good. But yeah, like in round four, I play Call the Vanguard, and I roll, I'm pretty sure on his ranger, who I think had lost like 1 or 2 health, so maybe like at 5 health or something, I want to say he rolled just an evade, and I rolled 6 damage just flat across 2 blues and a green. And I knew was like, it was a very good roll. I was like, oh my, it feels good, but also feels bad. But so during that round, I was able to pull 2 more rangers off the board, and I killed his Gideon. And at that point, he had Han, a full health Han left doing stuff. But at that point, I was like, I was still occupying, I think, like 3 or 4 objectives on the map. And all he was going to be able to do was maybe kill one more jet trooper at the end of the round. But that wasn't, I was going to go over 40, and he wasn't at that point. So just barely got through that one. But it was very close, and he's a very good player. I want to make one more comment too. I played against Han, I think, 5 times this tournament, and I never once attacked a Han Solo the whole tournament. Yeah. Never declared an attack on a Han.
The power of Han right there. Han's crazy. I mean,
he is.
You listen to Paul Heaver say he thinks he's overrated. And I mean, I can totally see the hype. Mm. The hype train is strong, but Han's ability to punish people. Oh. You didn't play X-Wing, did you, Eric?
Oh, I played X-Wing, yeah. No, I played X-Wing, yeah.
Okay, so Dengar and X-Wing, like, he just warped the meta because the ability to take this powerful, you know, hard-hitting figure, and then when you attack it, it's going to get a good attack back on you.
Oh,
it's
changed
so much of the math.
I remember Dengaru. I remember those.
Yeah, Dengaru, that awful thing. But like, Han does the same thing, you know, where, I mean, if you have to get close to make sure you're going to get range.
Yep.
But because you can't risk a long-range shot that might not hit, because Han is going to be able to hit you back.
Maybe Han's overrated, but honestly, I think every attack a Han Solo made in this tournament against me was 6+ damage. I don't think he ever rolled worse than that.
Yep,
it's rough. And then if it's focus, it's like always like 8 or 9 damage. It's like, oh my god, like it's just it's impossible to deal.
Things are one shot everywhere. Things are gonna get one shot. So.
hence all the cheap stupid units I have. It's like fine, just take them.
Yeah, sure, kill it.
Take them all. All right, and so I just squeaked through that game, and then it's time for finals, and it's kind of strange. Like, I don't know how I didn't expect to make it this far in this tournament, honestly. But by the time I was in these last two games, like, really, my memory is pretty bad about what is happening, because you're just kind of like, so you're just so exhausted that it's like, I just didn't have a good, I don't know, like, the clarity of plan that I had in a lot of the other missions. It's like, I don't recall it being that clear in these last ones as much. And maybe part of it, I do still call it, I kind of attribute it to being in the Mos Eisley back alleys kind of map, where it's like, you know, I can't use my usual tricks, because it's not as, I guess, what do you want to say? It's not as favorable to me as it would be in the other maps. Sure. So, but the finals was also on Mos Eisley back alley. This was like the first, rotation. I think this is when we had played every map at that point. So this is when they had to rotate a new one back in.
Oh, dang. And that's the one you drew.
Yeah. Yeah. It was Mos Eisley. And it was actually worse than that. It's the, one, you have the ones in front of you, but the one, the stash mission, where you bring the boxes back to the stash.
Concealed treasure.
Yeah. So, which is fine. In a normal match, but in finals, the timer goes from 60 minutes to 100 minutes, give or take, like 60 to 105. So it's kind of like, in the moment, I don't think I really put this together. I'm actually kind of surprised I had the lucidness to realize this, but even when I was playing it, I realized that I wasn't going to go to time, right? So the way I kind of described it to a friend today, but was the idea that, like, the list that I played kind of has a cadence, it has a rhythm of in round one, you try and grab minimal objective points, ideally to their zero, right? You get a very minimal lead. In round two, you try and push the issue, but that's when you get your big swing. Round two or three is when you should be looking for like an 8-0, a 10-0, a 12-0 objective point swing. Cause that's, and that's where you get your victory from. On this map, unfortunately, right, so if that cadence rhythm is then by round three and round four, the game's gonna be done. And you don't need to go the extra mile to chase down an Elite Ranger or chase down Han, or you don't need to do that stuff, because the onus at that point is on them to make something happen that they just probably can't, right? It's too late. They've already, that window is closed and the game's going to end. We're going to, you know, the time is up and you're going to win on points. And that's how the list wins games. With an extra like 40 minutes on the timer, I may not have realized how bad a position it was for me, but at least at the outset, I knew it's like, okay, I'm not going to win by, I can't win by victory points this game, essentially. I can't win by the timed victory points. I'm not going to go to time. Yeah. So I basically have to win by fighting. And, you know, maybe it wasn't obvious, I've been describing this list, but it's not exactly the most, it's not the most efficient, like, combat list, I would say.
No.
So it has.
Yeah, steady, like, low, medium damage.
Yep. So, it's, yeah, definitely.
Which is not bad, right? Like, it's better than having, like, you know, swingy damage.
Yeah.
But it's very consistent, like, medium, low damage.
Right. But I would not say, it's, like, not up there with, like, and this is what I'm going to go against, but it's not up there with, like, sentries. It's not up there with, I guess, like, Weequays or Onar, like, some of the more heavy hitters, things like that. And even the ATDP, I think, like, the ATDP... This is kind of like one of the things I realized playing it over the course of the past few weeks and at the tournament. But even that, its damage is good, but getting it into position, you know, getting an assault off with the ATDP is not a trivial task, I would say, right? So normally you're hoping to do you're hoping to do like an attack with it. And if you're in a really good, if you get it to do a two attack, it's probably in a very dangerous spot at that point that it's not going to leave that spot anymore.
Yeah.
So that's kind of going into the finals. I played against another local player, really great player. He had two sets of elite jets. He had a set of elite sentries. He had Palpatine, two officers, I believe. And then he had a whole host of other cards. So he had Zillow, Rule by Fear, and then Motivation on Palpatine, which is kind of, yeah, it was a really cool tech card. I thought it was really neat that he was playing that. And so... I got to give props to that. That's a really cool list, and I hope other people try that one out, because it's kind of... I like these lists that end up being, honestly, like, kind of a hot... When you look at it, you're like, where's the consistency in this list? What is this thing? But it's like, it's got a lot of tools in it that's really great. Knowing that I wasn't going to go to time, I suppose, like, another weakness, too, is that since this was the mission where you go grab boxes and bring them back, I knew that was also kind of a punishment, because even grabbing boxes on this mission is kind of, right, I'm reducing my offense if anything has to go out And because if you think about it, it's probably like a three round cycle for a figure to go to the box, grab it, and bring it all the way back. And generally, yeah. if you play enough Imperial Assault, you know, like by round three and four, everyone's hitting each other. So yeah, if a figure's dropping off a box in round three, they're not in the fray at that point. So really the boxes were kind of off, more or less off the table in some ways. And because it was the box mission as well, it's kind of, right, it's not even like on Shielded or some of those the stash missions. I couldn't even accumulate them over time in the same way. So, right, like, it was pretty hard. It's definitely was not a mission that was going to favor me all that well. But so this one is, basically, it's kind of funny because I'll cut to the end. Like, I didn't win this game. I lost, not horribly, like, at 39 to 34 was where we were at. Whoa.
That's way close.
At 39 to 34, I conceded because, basically he had just killed off one of my last jet. Like he had killed off my last two jet troopers in that final round, or like maybe I had one more or something, but basically they're all dead. And he had an officer who was going to carry a box in at that point. Mm-hmm. So I was about 10 points behind him at that point, just the way that match. And now I was building up to a point now. Oh, what I meant to say though, is like cutting to the end, like I was cleaning up and talking to him kind of after the fact. I just like, I told him that I was like, I can't really even think of any major event that happened in our game. Like there's no kind of talking about what we were talking about earlier. I can't think of any swingy thing that happened in this match of any note.
Yeah. There's no on the lands. There's no Jedi Lukes, no Blaze of Glory.
Right. It was the whole match was just pretty much like, oh, well, I'll throw dice at you and you'll throw dice at me and I'll throw dice at you. And part of it certainly was again, like, My opponent definitely played well, but his list was just probably, I do think, was just had like that little bit of extra oomph that helped a lot. Like those, man, people who are singing the song of the centuries, they're onto something. The century droids hurt.
Oh, yeah. And at like all range, they hurt, right? Like,
yeah.
The closer they get, just the more things they hurt.
Yeah, so. they're quite excellent. So, yeah, I lost. I didn't feel that bad about it. I was really happy to go home afterwards. Whew. That was a good one. But yeah.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it was a really fun tournament. I was happy. Obviously, I was happy I did it. I mean, most people who voluntarily go to tournaments are happy they did that, but.
That's cool. I'm glad the turnout was so good.
Yeah, for us 18, we've had some people fall off in the past year, and we had like just in the past 2 months, we've probably had like four or five brand new players which was shocking to me because all summer, summer's like kind of a bad time, but over the summer, there were only like three of us who would ever show up to our weekly night. So it was very quiet, very mellow. That's kind of my experience. Do you have any questions? You want to talk about anything from there?
You've given awesome round overviews, but I just want maybe give us some thoughts on what the dominant lists. So it sounds like there was a lot of Han.
I was obviously surprised how much Han there was. Yeah.
So let's, do you think that, so tell me what you think about Han in terms of did the rebels lose because of Han or despite Han? Like, would you say, cause I mean, you handle these very different Han lists, right? You handle the Han Rangers list, Han Ahsoka smuggler list, and you were able to beat them all. So obviously there's a common denominator there. That's not working out for them. So like, what do you think it is? I mean, is it like you just knew how to play against Han? They didn't know how to play Han against you. Like, what do you think is happening?
Yeah, well, maybe part of it is practice. Like, cause I played quite a bit of the new Han, I guess for a while. And I think like anyone who plays a significant amount of Han Solo, you learn over time that it's not only that he's just a four movement range figure, but just because of the synergy between C-3PO and Hera and sometimes some of your other support figures is that he's honestly even less mobile than you think he's going to be, right? He's pretty constrained, and that might be fine on that might be fine on some maps, but right now I think where there's a lot, this is part of it, but like there's a lot of objective points that his, just because of the amount, the way that he works and kind of the way that rebels are positioned right now in a way, right? Because even when you're running Han, there's not like a lot of good, I guess, like supporting cast that's going to go contest the objectives in the same way, right? So even if it's a Han Rangers, it's the same problem because Rangers don't want to go out on the map that much. You have now
they
Hutta.
They don't have riot troopers.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, they don't have like echo based troopers are kind of like that, but they're a point more expensive. They're not as tanky because they don't get that free block.
Yeah.
So it's like they they just don't have that thing that can efficiently
right.
hold territory.
Yeah, and that's I would say that's mainly the problem, is that right now Rebels just don't have a very good way to, they don't have good map control. They right, if you think about like there's a few like kinds of strategies, like are you going to be the person who takes an objective, or are you going to be the person who punishes someone for being on an objective? Yep. And it's yep. like some if there's enough troopers, right, if there's enough trooper swarm, you know, you can't punish them as efficiently as you need to, and they're just getting further ahead. And so, you know, that's kind of what that's kind of the only archetype I think that Rebels really has that's all that viable right now, is kind of that I'm going to have very high damage units, going to punish you for getting out of position, but they don't have anything that can honestly push the map out and take possession of, I guess, like objectives and things like that. It's quite difficult. Like
putting pressure on the map. Absolutely. Yeah. I noticed also that you said you did not run into a single scum list.
No scum list. One of our local players brought, he's a very good player, but he brought a scum list, IG, two elite sentries, two Jawas, and like one other card. It was like an elite Jawa and a regular Jawa and then something else. But he brought that, and he made it to top eight, I believe. I'm pretty certain he was in top eight. So we had a scum player in top eight. It's pretty fascinating. What I found was fascinating about it was that I just like that when people are like really, I remember a time when people were like, oh, Heart of the Empire is not going to change the meta at all. Like, Scum Hunters is too good. It's like, literally, there was no weak way pirates at this tournament at all. No one played weak ways, which I found pretty just incredible, because I still think they're in a fantastic unit. But
oh, they are, absolutely. Yeah. The problem, I think, for Scum Hunters was that Ugnaughts was really punishing the Scum Hunters.
Mm.
And then Heart of the Empire just gives a lot of answers to Ugnaughts. I mean, Vader and Riot Troopers can all handle Ugnaughts in the sense of, Vader... I was watching a Vassal game, and Brett Kelly, who is an amazing, absolutely amazing player.
He's a great player.
He's won regionals. He was playing a test game of, he was playing Ugnaughts against somebody playing Vader.
Mm.
And I mean, Brett is such a good player.
Yeah.
He knows how to play that Ugnaught list very well. But once Vader gets into their grill, it's like, what are they supposed to do? He's going to be losing one or two turns. He's never going to damage Vader.
Yeah.
And if IG has not put a significant amount of damage on Vader at that point, I just think it's pretty close to, I just don't know what they can do, because then you've got all these other, elite riot troopers and jets are also coming up and bringing pressure. So it just seems kind of crazy.
I think I've seen that happen with, the Ugnaughts are better against Jedi Luke than they are against Vader, but I've seen Jedi Lukes get into the Ugnaught swarm as well and just kind of start tearing up Ugnaughts.
Oh yeah. I mean, he's going to kill them just as easily as Vader will.
Yeah.
Once he gets into the fray, I mean, Vader will not take damage from them.
Right.
But
yeah.
Like, you know, they're both, also Vader doesn't have Son of Skywalker. So
that's true. That's true. Yeah.
I mean, like, that's like kind of the counterbalance, but
yeah, I was playing against, so Patrick is the guy who won, won Adepticon or something with the Ugnaught list the first time. He was the one who was running the sentries, but I remember playing against one of his early versions of it when it was still, this was when it wasn't the list that people talked about. This is when it was still a joke list, but I was playing against the version. This is when I did it with the Luke Skywalker, but I was playing against a version where he was still running a Bantha rider with it. This was before this was before IG was included in it, but yeah, that was, I always think back to that because I always find it fascinating to talk about metas, because I think some people will, I think people have a tend to probably go overboard when they're like, oh, this list is way too strong, or this figure's way too strong. Cause it's just like funny. It's like in the past year, I remember a time when nobody would have run Ugnaughts at all. And you know, a time when everyone was completely afraid of Ugnaughts, and then now I'm at a tournament where no one ran Ugnaughts. There's like two scum lists or one scum list, hardly any scum at all. So it just either things move quickly or people just don't, we actually just don't have enough information to probably know what actually is all that great all the time.
I think there's a lot of that. I mean, IA doesn't have, like, X-Wing has got Vassal and List Juggler, which is an incredible list aggregation.
Oh,
source. And we don't really have that. So it's more of, like, we hear about people winning with Ugnaughts, and so people try it, and sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't.
Right,
it's
just tough
to know. It does seem like Imperial's in an incredible spot right now in terms of, you know, the top two lists were at your regional were Imperial. Utah was won by Imperials. I mean, like, they're winning a lot. Brett Kelly won with, you know, Jedi, Luke, and Han. That's just because Brett Kelly is a crazy genius. DT won Seattle with the double Riots, double Jets. You know, I mean, like, Empire, the trooper swarm did go away.
Right.
Because Elite Storm just couldn't keep up. But, like, that archetype is so good in terms of having consistent damage and then board control, right? So
right.
if you're a good player and you know how to, like, manage those things, which obviously, like, you and DT know how to do, it can give you advantages over people who don't know how to play against it, so.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe it's a matter of time, honestly, because it's, you know, Pat, again, like Patrick, my buddy here, we were just theorizing today about, like, could you make, like, a Bantha Rider work again or things like that? Like, and it was, like, if a whole bunch of people started running, like, Jet Troopers and, you know, running, like, the Riot Trooper Swarm or something, it's like, oh, yeah, maybe that wouldn't be that bad. It's hard to say because everything has more health now, but, yeah. I don't know. Honestly, I feel like part of the problem, too, is that, so even, you know, we don't have list juggle, we don't have all these things, but I honestly, I think part of the truth is as well, like, when I observe the gaming culture around here, you can play X-Wing every night of the week at a store in our area, and it's, like, 30-plus players. So if you just imagine just, like, the exponential amount of games that are probably going on of X-Wing versus the, let me think, like, probably I can probably count it on two hands how many games are played on our weekly night of Imperial Assault. So it's like, it's just not, it's just not even comparable sometimes when you think about have it's we figured out
data.
We just don't know enough sometimes, but
absolutely.
To that end, it's, I actually think that makes Imperial Assault kind of a better game that it hasn't been squeezed, you know, so hard to out what's the absolute most efficient thing. Because honestly, like, my opinion right now is that this game is better than it's ever been. It's kind of, it's like kind of, it's kind of sad that more people aren't playing it. Because right now it's just like, when I look at the, like, not just the list, but even talking about, right, like, tonight I just described an archetype that I think for a long time that people would have thought, you can't play this way, right? Like, a year ago, it's, you know, when it was all Scum Hunters and it's like, there's no way to beat that damage. It's like, I could describe to you a few archetypes of ways you can play, and these archetypes have existence in each faction that you can try if you want, and there's small variations on all of them. And they're all pretty viable, right? They can all kind of, some might be better than others, I'll admit that, but they can win still. You can still win games with them. It's not, definitely not like a guarantee one way or the other. So yeah, I think that makes the game really excellent right now. And it's just fun to go to game nights, honestly, because in our meta, at least, like, people just show up with different stuff all the time. They're just showing up with new lists. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty fun.
Yeah. It's in a great, I mean, it is in a great spot. There's so much to do in terms of, like, there's so many ways to win either by killing people, doing objectives, controlling, blah, blah, blah. Right.
And yep.
That just makes it like, the decision trees just go crazy so fast. Like what you want to build. Like, I mean, because your list is totally different than like a Vader Palp list, even though all the units except two would be the same, right?
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
It's really cool that those lists that have like a similar backbone are just completely different in terms of how they play.
Yeah, and that's really entertaining. God, I just had a question for you. No, I can't remember what it is. Are there any figures that you think like are maybe secretly good that you're not sure? This is my favorite part thinking about it. I was like thinking about, so I have a friend here who he was in the tournament yesterday and he ran, this is Jake, but he ran Maul. He like wants to make Maul work. He really wants to see like what are people missing something about Maul. I've never been excited about him, but maybe I am.
You know, like, the thing is, I think with these exploiting of arbitrage opportunities is that there's clearly like thing like Weequays.
Yep.
They have got an ability to hide. They've got easy access to focus. They've got, they're rolling two greens. Like, they've got like a great stat line. So you look at them, you're like, yeah, that's awesome.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Where like, you look at something like, I want to say like Lando is a good example because Lando is overcosted.
Yep.
I
yep.
totally admit that. But Lando does some insane things.
Oh, that hide.
In terms of,
oh man, that hide stun surge.
So good. Plus two damage, right? Like his cheat to win card is so good.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
And then he's got access to On the Lamb. He's got like, he's just great, right? And so yes, he's overcosted. And yes, you could maybe do like get more efficient points than what he's giving you. But if you play him and if you know how to play him, you're going to get a crazy amount of value out of him, and he's going to do things your opponents aren't expecting. And I can totally see something like Maul. Like Maul, I don't think he's overcosted. I think the problem is more like there's not a place for him really in the meta. But that means that like people carve those places in the meta and are like, well, he's going to do this. And if they figure out how to do that, then I think they can make it work.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, unfortunately, like Maul, Ahsoka, I think this has been a problem in Imperial Assault since its inception, but there's just always been a problem with melee figures, expensive melee figures in general, is that the way the game, and again, I don't know if this is a problem with these figures in particular in any specific way, but right, the game has a very hard time rewarding those types of figures just because the way damage gets, I don't know, the way that they just get stuck out in the open is probably the main problem, right? Is that it's very hard to, I guess, like, get enough value out of them before they fall off the board. So it's kind of hard to figure out if they're as value as you think. But yeah, my next goal is Gamorrean guards. I haven't played them a lot. I want to see what I can do with them. So
Rob, on our Slack channel, Rob Stanley from Texas, he swears by Gamorrean guards.
Yeah.
And he actually makes a pretty convincing case for their, I mean, they've got that +1 block against all ranged attacks.
So good.
And so as guardian cards, you know, as we get good guardian cards, they're just going to increase in value. So
Them
and riots are going to be interesting to watch how they kind of climb the meta, because like they've got similar stat lines. Obviously, the Gamorreans have reach and hit a little bit harder.
Oh man, they're so good.
They don't have innate access to Zilla, which is kind of a problem, right? You got to like put them in Imperial. So and Zilla's just so good.
Oh man, yeah. Yeah, Zilla's great.
Cool. Well, do you have any concluding thoughts, Eric? Anything, any other pearls of wisdom you want to share with us?
Oh man, I feel like I've just given it all away tonight. So
that's awesome.
Oh no, I was very happy to be on. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Well, we are glad to have you. We are so glad. We want to thank everybody for downloading the podcast, listening to us. Please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. And if you want to join us on the Slack channel, send an email to zionsfinestia@gmail.com. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Bye.